Welcome to Manager Tools. Top Interviewer Mistakes, Chapter 1. The questions this cast answers are, what are the biggest mistakes interviewers make? What are the basics of effective interviewing? And what can I do to prepare for an interview?
Hey folks, it's Mark here. Obviously, we're going to do an ad for our Effective Hiring Manager Conference in a podcast that's about interviewer mistakes. It's not that hard to improve your interviewing skills. It really isn't. There's some preparation that needs to be done, and there's some things you can do in the actual interview. And the EHMC will take you through every single step, just like a recipe. Some of my consultant friends think I write too simplistically, but I write for what I would have wanted when I was a manager and nobody was telling me, what do I do in this situation? So for hiring skills, interviewing skills, come to the Effective Hiring Manager Conference.
Hello, everyone. Back again. If you are listening to this as it comes out, this is a Valentine's Day cast. And
you bet. Romantic.
Yes. We're going to talk about a very not romantic topic, interviewing. And this content for both Sarah and I think is, I don't know, I find interviewing and the idea of bringing new people into the organization, all that, I find it so interesting. We talk a lot about our effective hiring manager conferences and trainings and how we always feel like we have so much more to say.
Yeah, every time.
Yeah.
Not enough hours.
Even the last time I presented that training, I was not on agenda multiple times. And I apologize for those of you who were here with me in Austin in January of 2022, because I was not on agenda multiple times. We still covered everything that we were meant to cover. And I still had that experience. Every single time I end that event, I think to myself, I had 2 more hours of stuff to say. And I never get to say it. I don't have the sense that they feel that they're missing out. We are delivering the core stuff, but I just have, there's so many things to say about interviewing that I don't get to say.
I totally agree. It's one of those things that, I mean, we've all done, and we've all done at least once poorly, I think. And that's part of the problem, right? As someone who has done it poorly, I speak for myself here. There's always, always more to be said.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to start a series that will help us to say more things about interviewing. And this particular topic is something that we've been saying for almost 20 years here. If you want to make managing easier, you need to hire better. We start at the very, at the source of the problem, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Follow the creek upstream. The thing is, most managers don't know how to interview.
Right.
Managers cave to HR. They do panel interviews. They talk too much. You don't spend enough time on it, and so on and so forth. And many, many things happen. We're going to start to talk about the most common and worst mistakes and how to fix those mistakes and improve your process and get closer to the source such that you have a better way to do this. And hopefully it turns out better and you can make your managerial life easier.
Yes, absolutely.
So we've got 2 items on our outline today.
We do. Today, our Chapter 1 podcast is going to center around the fact that many of these mistakes center around weak preparation or having no clear target. Then, after that, we'll give listeners a solution to that problem. Now, before going into those topics, though, we're going to start this first cast of a new series by first setting it up, giving a bit of background. Being that this will be an ongoing series, I mean, let's face it, there are a lot of mistakes going on. There are far more mistakes than we can possibly cover in this one 30-minute podcast. So a little background, starting with the reason for this particular series of podcasts. And I mean, it truly boils down to the fact that most managers are terrible at interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
We are, right? And I mean, not for bad reason, in that it's understandable. I mean, we've got a job opening, we need to fill it, We're usually in a rush because there's pressure on ourselves, on our team. We know what we need, right? We've done the job before, potentially. We know the job. We know what we're looking for. All of the reasons that we rush to hire are completely reasonable. And managers have been behaving this way for about 100 years. So the reasons that cause us to rush, to not prepare, are abundant and all make sense.
And I think they're compounded, if you will, mm-hmm. by the situation where there's an opening mm-hmm. and you're having this experience with the people around you that they know that having that hole is causing issues. And so you're constantly hearing about it, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, hey, we have a hole. We have a hole. We yeah. have a hole. In my previous industry, we called it an open rec, like an open requisition.
Yep.
And you feel all this pressure for yeah. speed because of the people around you. You're in a meeting. Oh, that position's not filled. Oh, that position, we would give this work to that person if they were here. You really find, I think, this pressure from
Absolutely.
Internal partners and things that makes you move too quickly. You're move rushing. Quickly. Yeah, you're rushing. And y'all may have had this experience, interestingly, from the other side.
Yeah.
Right?
I think we all have.
Hopefully. And I guess not everybody. Maybe your hiring situation is different. I suppose I could think of like a few possibilities. But you may have had firsthand experience with how well managers hire, even if you've never done it yourself, because you've been a candidate. And so if you ask yourself, what was my experience with a candidate or as a candidate, not with a candidate, but as one, mm-hmm. that probably tells you all you need to know about managers' general inability to hire mm-hmm. well. I remember an interview that I went through where I was interviewing. It was pretty clear that they wanted to put a panel together and they hadn't really told everybody. Okay, and yeah. so the panel was full of people in casual Friday Phoenix, yeah. Arizona clothes. And I was in a suit, Brooks Brothers. I was viciously uncomfortable because I was so, so, so hot. It was July in Phoenix. And I had gotten some poison ivy on my foot. So my foot was massively swollen.
Uh-huh.
I was it's actually here in Texas, we call it bull nettle. It's basically like a poison ivy, poison oak kind of situation. And I was just miserable and it was so hot and my foot was killing me. I almost couldn't get it in my dress shoe. And I went to the panel and it was five people in Hawaiian shirts and jeans and flip-flops.
Yeah.
And I could tell they had been brought in kind of last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And it was absolutely an example of that rush and a lack of preparedness. And I would even go so far as to say the interview went quite well. It actually ended up mm-hmm. getting an offer and accepting it. I do know, though, that those people who were there were put in a position where it was hard for them to do their best. So even if you're not the hiring manager, you could be put in a position by the other people around you where
mm-hmm. Oh, totally.
You're not
prepared.
Yeah, you're not prepared and you don't have time to be prepared.
Yeah.
And you're in a Hawaiian shirt.
And you're in a Hawaiian shirt. Exactly. And they're wildly uncomfortable. Now, folks, something that's somewhat related to this is another thing that we at Manager Tools often hear about this hiring process from candidates specifically, is we're constantly hearing about how they got interviewed by someone quite senior, an executive, as opposed to a frontline manager, and how that experience was so different in that being interviewed by someone more senior, an executive in the organization, it just seemed like they were so much better at interviewing. And because we as candidates then take that data, right, the frontline manager interview versus the executive's interview, we contrast the executive skill against those other more junior managers.
Mm-hmm.
So then we ask ourselves, okay, it's true. So why are some executives so much better at hiring? Well, There are two reasons for this. Now, the first being, if you've been in an organization for a long enough time that you are at an executive level role, you've got a hell of a lot more experience. When you become a manager, you're going to be interviewing the remainder of your career. Mm-hmm. What that means is, by the time you're an executive, you have made all of the likely mistakes that you will made, all of the likely mistakes that we're going to talk about in this series. But said differently, you've stepped in it a lot of times. And if you've been paying any sort of attention whatsoever.
To the process, right?
To the process, yeah. What you're doing, the things that you're engaging in, the activities you're doing, the questions you're asking. You may have it mapped out, and it might be even in an informal way in your brain, just by noticing and paying attention. You've got somewhat of a record in your mind of the wins and losses. Mm-hmm. And as an executive, you spent some time thinking about what you did that resulted in a good outcome, what you did that didn't result in a good outcome. So there's that.
Hopefully, because you've done this over and over again, you've gotten better at it because you've had to do it over and over again. And that's a hopeful mentality. Mm-hmm. It's not true for all executives because some of us are suffering under the burden of the Christmas rule, Horseman's Christmas rule, which is we're usually terrible at important things that we do rarely.
Mm-hmm. Like Christmas or Valentine's Day, because that's timely.
That's a good point, actually. Do you know who doesn't have a dinner reservation with their fiance for Valentine's Day?
Maybe it's Kate?
It's me. It is. It's me.
Fully you.
I have recipes to make dinner. So I've done that. And I should know better. I forgot.
It happens every year.
I'm good at Christmas. On November 1st, I make a list of all the people I need to buy for. Then I make a list of all the stuff I'm going to buy for them. And then I go to Amazon and I flag those things in a list. Then I have a deadline to order them on December 1st. Mm-hmm. See, the thing is, you have to be paying attention to get better.
You do.
And I wasn't paying attention to Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. So maybe I should hot wash it.
Yeah.
Which is what we would recommend after every time you do a hiring process.
Yeah.
Hot wash it.
Hot wash it.
Yeah. Get a sense. What went well? Take a look at your process. You could do it for Christmas as well. And maybe just also set reminders for other Valentine's Day. Really? How did I miss it? In any case.
It happens.
That's only the first reason, right? Is it a lot of experience? There's a second one, though.
Absolutely. The other reason is actually probably a little bit more important in that you'll never become an executive if you don't get good at hiring as a manager. That is, think of it as managers. Our work output, our results are essentially the amalgamated results of a group of people. Mm-hmm. In what world would you as a manager think you can achieve your goals all by yourself? I mean, you can't. What that means then, in respect to the hiring process, is not only will your weak hiring haunt your results, but executives specifically evaluate managers' ability to hire when they're thinking about increasing the responsibility of those managers. That is, when we're looking promotions, who becomes an executive? We consider who's getting the best results. Who gets the best results? The manager who's got the best people. It all comes back to hiring.
Yeah. If you hire well, you have better people, you have better results.
Absolutely.
And we have to remember that managers are evaluated on whether or not they can get their people promoted.
Yeah.
And that largely happens because great results are created by you and your team and your top performers. Mm-hmm. It's different when you're an executive. And I just came from a session about delegation, and we talked a lot about this today. This is my second kind of round of this today of the difference. One of the differences between managers and executives is that executives get evaluated on whether or not when their directs do get promoted, those directs perform in excellence.
Yeah.
So good hires mean more likelihood that your directs will do well and thus better evaluation for yourself as an executive.
Absolutely.
And if you're not sure, okay, what are these mistakes? We're going to cover them. The most common mistakes and the egregious ones. Mm-hmm. The most common, the one we're going to begin with, is weak preparation, again, and no clear target. So this is a situation where Kate uses words and they come out ungarbled. This is a situation where most managers fail before we even begin.
Yeah.
As managers, we focus on the candidate before we focus on the target.
Mm-hmm.
And that sentence might sound odd to you because you may have assumed that the target is the candidate. Our target is not candidates. Our target is the job we are trying to fill.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter how good you think the candidate is.
In fact, what if they are really good? They could be extremely good. Let's say they're good, Kate. What if they're really good? Does it matter?
Not unless they can do the job.
No, they could be really great, but if they can't do the job, they're by definition not good in this case.
Yeah. I'm sure some other people have had this experience. I have a friend mm-hmm. who is a wonderful person. Mm-hmm. Genuinely wonderful. I could never work with him.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. These people are all over the place.
There's a lot of people I know who are wonderful.
Great.
And
so good. So
they
nice.
Would be terrible at this job.
Mm-hmm. And not terrible at every job.
No,
exceptional
absolutely not.
At some jobs.
Not this job.
But not this job. And that's the thing.
Uh-huh.
By focusing on the candidate,
mm-hmm.
you're right. You're excited. This is a great person. They're wonderful. They're amazing. But we can't know whether or not they're fit if we don't know what we're looking for.
There's no sense in looking for the puzzle piece if you don't know what shape it's going
yeah,
into.
Yeah.
If you have the puzzle 90% done, which is mm-hmm. a bit like having a position open on your team, then the puzzle is 90% done. And imagine that the holes that are left are single piece holes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you don't go looking necessarily because usually by that point you've done everything except the water. You're not going to look for, is it blue? They're all blue. You're looking for, does it have edges that come in, go out? Is it weird shaped on the corner? We're defining the outline into which the person will fit.
Yeah.
Focusing on the candidate should only happen after we've defined what the shape of the role is. And another way to think of this is before you can start interviewing effectively, because you could interview all day long.
Oh, you could.
But in order to interview effectively, you must know what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not a new opening, okay, let's say it's a position that was previously filled, and that's what we mean by if it's not a new opening, because it could be newly open. And yeah. if it's a position that's been filled before, I can assure you, it has changed since the last time you filled it, which, by the way, means the job description is probably obsolete. You don't need to start there. You need to start with what it is that would make a person successful in the role. And if you're thinking about candidates, when we ask managers, hey, what are you looking for? Oftentimes you get a lot of the same stuff, which I would say often describes my friend who I wouldn't want to work with, right? Smart, hardworking, nice, ethical, knowledgeable. It's a real cool dude. And y'all, these are traits and characteristics.
Yeah.
Our data shows that most interviewers assume, it's called the similarity effect, that people who have a similar job and educational history as the interviewer are nice and ethical and smart and so on. It's
exactly.
It's a confirmation bias situation.
It's absolutely a confirmation bias. And note, DISC can come into play here too.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? If you're familiar with DISC, different communication styles, your communication style also can play a bias. You click with those people that have the same communication style as you. And they seem to be saying the words that make sense. I mean, they seem great. And frequently, when we ask managers what they're looking for, they give us these characteristics, right? These traits and characteristics. The problem here is that these traits and characteristics are things that are only inferred from behaviors. That is, you don't see someone and that person is hardworking. You see someone who worked their way through university and has paid off all their student loans. And you see them as taking on additional duties in the evening. And you see them as doing things that are representative of someone who is hardworking. Mm-hmm. So what we're looking for, what we need here as managers, as hiring managers, is more work, not more traits. We need to see tasks. We need to see things that they've done. Smarts and ethics don't accomplish tasks. Behaviors accomplish tasks. Mm-hmm. As a reminder, if we're thinking about what behaviors are, we've said this before, we will say it again. Behaviors, the words you say, how you say them, facial expression, body language, work product. Yeah. I'm exaggerating work product on purpose. That is what we're looking for.
The first big mistake that most and virtually all managers make really is failing to do a behavioral analysis of the target job to set a criteria against which to compare all candidates.
Yeah.
That's what we're suggesting, is that you're looking at the people rather than the outline of the job and mm-hmm. rather than the behaviors that would make a person in that role successful. And the solution is engage in a job behavioral analysis.
Absolutely.
And we're going to tell you how to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, folks, it's Mark again. I know many of you are listening, hundreds of thousands are listening, and some of you, many of you are not licensees. I want to encourage you again to become a licensee. Probably the biggest difference between licensee and not, many people would say the interviewing series, which certainly makes a difference on the interviewee side of interviewing. But the biggest one in my mind is Executive Tools. It's our biweekly cast focused on senior managers and executives. And if you're a manager now, you want to be thinking now about the kind of problems you're going to have in the future. And in order to make that more interesting for you, in the near-term future here on Manager Tools Cast, we're going to share an Executive Tools Cast as a gift so you can see what you're missing. I hope to hear from you about what you think about the cast.
There are a couple of ways that we recommend doing a behavioral job analysis. The first is digging into various sources of information about the job, then consider them and develop behavioral interview questions that ask candidates about those skills which you've already previously identified as being the most important skills for this role.
Mm-hmm.
Now, note, it's far better to pin down skills and abilities, which can be measured based on past experience, than it is to, again, focus on those traits and characteristics, which are things that we only infer mm-hmm. from previous behaviors. Frankly, the only reliable way to predict future behavior is by measuring past behavior. It's not perfect. It's not a perfect measure, but it's definitely the best one we've got.
My favorite is when people are saying, well, I've done the job. I'll interview. I can do it. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, I have this gut. I have a good gut feeling. It's no, thank you.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Those people who say stuff like that, they interview poorly. They don't think about the behaviors of the job. They think about whether they like a person. And
right.
we would suggest that, in fact, the only way to determine if a person will be good in a role is to evaluate the role for behaviors and then ask questions to determine if the person has engaged in the behaviors before.
Yeah.
And there's four sources as a foundation for this. Job
yes,
descriptions.
They are. Yeah, job descriptions, performance reviews.
Top performers.
And the manager tools questionnaire,
yeah.
which we'll go over.
Good. So job descriptions are sometimes good sources of information about a role. Of course, too often they're out of date or they don't exist.
They don't exist.
Or the job description was written before you took over the role and you've changed it, whatever it is. You should take whatever you can from the job descriptions that you have, make a list of the skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics that are listed or implied.
Mm-hmm.
Don't narrow the list you come up with. Think of this phase of hiring as brainstorming rather than decision-making, deciding, if you will.
Yeah. Tons of podcasts on brainstorming. Gonna
yeah.
plug those right here. Tons of podcasts on brainstorming. Quantity over quality in this case, all of the ideas.
When you brainstorm, not in terms of the podcast. The podcasts are quality. There is a quantity and they are of good quality. And the idea with brainstorming is we're looking at quantity rather than quality right now. Yes. And if you're making this list, okay, some people have told us that when they're making the list, they like to jot down next to the behaviors, the skills and traits and stuff, like a note of where they got it. So a job description, like you could, you know, ability to write code in Python /or -, job JD for job description. So you know where you got that. And if there isn't a job description, don't worry. Mm-hmm. These other sources will help you.
Absolutely. For example, performance reviews. So next, you're going to take a look at the recent performance reviews for directs that have held the position. Maybe even those that have a role that's similar to that of the open position. Look at all of the criteria in their review, the performance review that you're expected to fill out and fulfill at the end of the year, that review. You're going to look at both the qualitative and quantitative aspects of that review. What is it asking for? Essentially, the job review is measuring the things that are most important to our organization. That's why they're qualifiers on the job review. Anyway, what we mean in terms of these criteria are those areas that are evaluated. That is, as opposed to the things, the notes you wrote down underneath, right? If it's teamwork, for example, which surely teamwork is going to make the list of those things, then that's what we want to know. What is that qualifier? As opposed to teamwork, the notes underneath. She did a really great job of leading a team of 5 or more people toward a common target this year.
Yeah, we're looking at criteria in the areas that are based on the form. So if you're looking at the performance review, if you're looking at the form, if you're looking at what is on that list, as opposed to your notes, that's what we're right. Looking through. We're just making a list of criteria that strike us as important.
Yeah, important to you, right? For you and your team. You want to trust yourself here, right? There's no wrong answers. That is, as you interview more, you're going to learn more. But there are going to surely be things like teamwork. We'll go back to that one because it's there. It's in there in all of them. And teamwork may be even one of those things on the review, but it may not be important to you, or it is extremely important to you and that team that you're managing right now because the team's not been working well together, right? Keep that in mind. Put your measure for what is necessary for the current situation into consideration while looking at those things that are measured.
Yeah. It's almost like you're thinking about what's currently happening and then also kind of defining the future for yourself, thinking about the vision that you have for the role, making a note of that, what you want and why it is important. Mm-hmm. Remember, though, you're gathering data, sort of brainstorming, not magically making the target. A bit of patience, because we have also top performers to evaluate for. So take a look at the top performers. Take a look at the performance comments on the performance review. So not just the things listed, but the comments. What comments stand out? Make a note of those. And then one step further, compare the qualitative areas of top performers to those average or lower performers.
And just to interject here, folks, when we say top performers, we mean all of them, not top performers in this job role that you're hiring for now. What makes for a top performer on Kate's team?
Mm-hmm. Again, a little bit of vision.
Yeah.
What makes the great ones great and what makes others less great? Are your poor performers poor communicators? Most of them are. If so, maybe for this new role, you do not compromise on communication skills. And thinking ahead, you could think about what questions you'll ask to get at that skill of stellar communication.
Absolutely.
And you add all of this to your list of stuff.
Yeah, you could even consult those top performers. That is, we'd suggest in terms of top performer review, you email them Mm-hmm. What do they think makes them effective and why? What skills or abilities do they see in their behaviors as truly making a difference in their ability to succeed? And you can do this by either going through the list that you just created, you just made yourself, and you could send that to them, asking them for comment, or you can just ask for free form input. Either way works. Now, to be clear, we've tried it both ways. Give them a list of the things I think are important, ask them to whittle it down, or ask for free form. Both of them work just fine. Here we'd have you think about tailoring it, I think is the right word, tailoring it a little bit. Consider the approach that you want to take based on the person, on the people that you're asking. Are they the kind of people that need something to start with and they're going to find it more easy to whittle down your list? Or will they do just fine if asked for a general request for input, mm-hmm. which works for them? Mm-hmm. Now, additionally, I'm not sure this needs to be said, but I will say it anyway. There's no need at this point to consult your bottom performers. What do you think it is that you do that makes you not good at your job? You don't need to ask. It's a waste of time because you're not trying to find more of them.
You get the Dark Mark Award today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Got it. Gold star for me.
Yeah. And not them. Maybe we both get a dark mark.
Maybe we do both.
We shouldn't be dark marking on Valentine's Day. And
I know, but...
But we don't have a reservation, so
no,
we can do it.
Reservation. It's super dark over here.
we're just going to stay home. All right. One more resource here, the Manager Tools questionnaire. And the idea here is that you'll create your own version of the list of questions below, answer it yourself, and mm-hmm. send it to your top performers. Mm-hmm. And this is the list. The reason this company created this job. The most important ways a person doing this job should spend their time. Two or three most important duties of this job. What this job takes to be successful is. The easiest way to see whether this job is being done well is. If I followed high performers around for a day, what would I see them do? Work product the role produces that I rely upon. What top performers do that makes them so good is. The one or two metrics this team lives and breathes and dies by are.
Mm-hmm. And if you're a licensee, print those out.
Yeah.
And fill them in because you have the show notes. It's easier than going back and writing them all down. Now, most of the time, once we have all of this information gathered, the next phase beyond going through looking at the job reviews, talking to top performers, considering all of these factors, the next step then is easy. What 5 to 7 behaviors of this list of things I've created do we think matters the most for someone to do the job well, the job that we're hiring for right now? Mm-hmm. Once we know what those 5 to 7 behaviors are, we can then create behavioral interview questions that are targeted toward finding out whether or not that person is able to do the things we need them to do.
Mm-hmm. Whether they've done it in the past.
Yeah, have they done it in the past? Because that's the best way of measuring. But it would appear as though our time is up. And we will cover that topic in another cast, the How to Create Behavioral Interview Questions cast. So stay tuned for future chapters.
Interviewing is a critical skill for managers. Uh-huh. Most of us aren't any good at it. But we can become an expert at it by applying ourselves in a systematic way. And it starts with creating a clear target. That is the job. Not the humans, the job.
Exactly.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Kate.
Thanks, y'all. That's it for today. We'll be back next week. Bye, y'all.